Hey guys, do you like heavy metal? Do you like video games, comic books, movies, theme parks, or even cool TV shows? We've got the place for you. Metal Geeks. Time to rock out with your geek out. Here are your hosts, Kerry the Metal Geek, Dave, and George. Geek it out, fellas.
This is James Avera from Hellstar and Sabbath Judas Sabbath! Rock out with your geek out!
Welcome, everyone, to the Metal Geeks podcast. I am your host. I am Kerry the Metal Geek, along with...
Brutal Dave here.
Brutal Dave, what's up, man?
Been real fucking busy.
So we're switching it around. This time, George isn't here and you're here. And last time, you weren't here and George was.
Right.
We're just taking turns, I guess.
I suppose. I guess, so George can't talk right now, right? That's the thing.
Yeah. He's sick.
Okay.
Or, you know, he says he's sick. He just lost his voice, basically. And that's is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I imagine it's life-changing for George.
This is the time we need to ask him about his opinions on movies. When he can't speak. We love you, man.
Hope you feel better, bud.
So you've been getting ready for, you've been doing it already, but you're at the new Ren Fair?
Yeah, the Sherwood Forest Fair, yeah. Outside Austin, about 40 miles outside Austin. It's been consuming my life for the last month, getting ready to do that. And, well, I guess month and a half at this point, because we're 2 weeks in to the festival now. It's an 8-weekend show, and it's all Robin Hood themed. I don't remember what year it is there. When you go in, they have a specific year that this whole thing takes place in. I can't remember what it is this year. But, yeah, we're set up back out there, selling artwork, and I sit out and do live drawing and stuff during the day. And
are you an accented there, too?
I do indeed.
Nice.
I turned on the Scottish pretty good there. I told you about the guy at TRF that was actually from Scotland, and he found my accent so convincing that he tested me on the knowledge.
Wow.
It's
not bad.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I can't do it, so I don't think I can really do any accents, truthfully.
I guess maybe it's in the blood.
Yeah.
It's where my peoples come from.
That's true.
So.
I haven't been out to Sherwood. I've driven by it before when I came back from Austin one time.
Yeah.
Down 290, right?
Right. If you're driving that 290 stretch between Austin and Houston, you drive right by it.
Yep. I'm going to have to come out there one time. Looks fun.
It's a good time. The grounds are... I'm estimating here maybe a third the size of the Texas Renaissance Festival, but they're beautiful grounds. It's a lot more trees. It's
like a forest.
It is.
It's in the forest.
It's Sherwood Forest, and they really emphasize the actors and the, well, appropriate to what we're going to talk about later, that they, it's a more immersive experience, right, is what they're going for.
But it's a little bit... I've never been, so it feels a little bit different when Texas Renaissance Fair is, because that's more a different, sort of feels like a different time period, because Sherwood Forest is based, of course, you know, on a fictional, you know, series.
Mm-hmm.
It's Robin Hood and that type of ilk, so it feels like it's a little bit different enough, so it's worthwhile, you know.
Yeah,
I mean?
Yeah. No, it still falls under that general Renaissance Fair umbrella.
Yeah.
But it's the feel of the show is very different from TRF.
Jousting and...
No, there is.
Oh, there is.
Yeah, that happens right outside my shop. I watch all the jousts.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
So our shop is right down from where the joust is. So if I stand on the front of our shop, I can watch them go. So,
well, if you're heading out to the Sherwood Forest, what's it called?
Sherwood Forest Fair.
Sherwood Forest Fair. Come check out. What's your booth?
My booth number is 407, and we're in the row of shops between the Joust and the Lionheart Tavern.
There's a Joust arcade machine there?
No.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, guys on horses hitting each other with sticks.
Not guys on ostriches hitting each other with sticks.
ostriches, yeah.
Did you ever play that game, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Did that game ever make sense to you?
No, never.
I think I played it, like, again recently, and I'm like, okay, I know... what you're supposed to do, but it still doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. It's I have it on there was like a Sega Genesis cart that had that game and a bunch of other like classic arcade games. I don't remember what all was on it anymore, but I remember Joust was one of the games on there. I have a copy of that. Yeah, and I've played it off and on, and it's like, I still don't know what
the fuck. The purpose of, okay, you're on it flying ostriches, and then you're jousting with each other, but what's the deal with the egg, and how do figure out how to win?
Don't you, like, even though you're jousting, aren't you still, like, trying to land on the other person's head or something like that?
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah. I think it was a lot of ideas that didn't really get off the drawing table, and they're like, "Yeah, let's just throw it in there."
Or it was—I don't know. There were so many games like that, though. Like in that, you know, '80s and early '90s era video, before video games became the billion-dollar industry that they are now, there was a lot of, we don't know what the fuck we're doing, so we're just gonna throw.
Yeah,
we're going to throw things at the wall. And
it was usually
like
one dude programming it. He's like, I got a game. I'm going to do this game.
Yeah.
And fucking made people millionaires.
Well, I want to say the original team that went on to become, you know, id and Bethesda and all the, I want to say the original team that started, you know, doing like working on Wolfenstein 3D, for example, I want to say it was only like 5 or 6 people.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I don't know that. I don't remember exactly, but I know it was a very small team.
And they're probably still working there, too.
Some of them, I think, are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Growing up, what games did you play? Did you play more? Did you have a PC? Did you play any of those, like, shareware games and that kind of stuff?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Remember, like, I think with Jazz Jackrabbit?
I don't remember that one.
It was like a episodic, like, little platformer game.
Okay. Any, like, Commander Keen at all?
Was Commander Keen, yeah.
Yeah, I played the Commander Keen. Played Wolfenstein and Doom.
Oh yeah,
obviously. I mean, Doom is like my jam.
I had Total Doom.
Final Doom.
Or the Final one, Doom, yeah.
Final Doom, and then the prior to that was
Total Doom
Ultimate Doom.
Okay,
with the extra bonus episode, Thy Flesh Consumed, which is like
that's a great band name.
Great fucking name.
That's a great band name. That's it. New band name.
Yep.
We're just going to create shit based off of Doom.
You could.
You really could.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You been playing anything recently? Any newer games?
I've been playing Skyrim recently. Oh. I started to play Wolfenstein The New Colossus, and then I ended up really sidetracking myself because I found one of the Easter eggs, and it sent,
we talked about that.
It sent me completely off the edge, and so I haven't really gone back.
You played
since
the original
then.
Wolfenstein, but was like in a different time.
Right. So you play, there's an arcade game on the submarine that you're using as a base that you have stolen from the Nazis. And so there's an arcade game in one of the break areas that's called Wolfstone. And it's the same game as Wolfenstein 3D, but everything's been laid over so that instead of like posters of Hitler, it's posters of B.J. Blaskowitz or like American flags or
whatever. I mean, what else would Nazis play?
Right.
We're not going to fight Nazis.
Right. And so it's the same. It's the exact same game, but it's switched around. So now you're playing the German soldier trying to escape from an allied fortress or whatever.
I truthfully haven't, personally, I haven't really been playing a lot. I've been busy with work and just, you know, other things going on in my life. I've been playing a little bit more Bayonetta 2.
Okay.
The game is fucking balls crazy. I mean, it's just, I think we talked about this before, I had to put it on easy because on the higher difficulty, it just wasn't fun. I'm like, why am I gonna play this game and not have fun on it? But it's just like huge boss battles, and the better you do, the less clothes your character wears, and like... You shoot out of your feet. They have guns on your shoes.
Yeah, I've not played any of those. They seem
really
weird. Ridiculous.
And you pull and you like call demons to fight for you and stuff like that.
Mm.
It's a really weird but really fun game.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a third one coming out sometime too.
When did the second one come out? Isn't it pretty new?
It originally came out on the Wii U.
Okay.
And nobody ever played that.
Okay.
So they re-released it on the Switch recently.
Okay.
And if you bought the Switch version, you also got the first Bayonetta, which was, I think it was a 360 game, if I'm not mistaken. So a little bit older game.
Okay.
Yeah. And I played the demo for the new Kirby game.
You know, the only Kirby game I've ever played was Kirby Pinball on
Game Boy.
That's the only Kirby game I've ever
played. Kirby's all right. I mean, it's... it's simple and it's just mindless, you know, platforming games. But sometimes that's what you want.
Yeah.
You just want a nice, pretty looking game. And that's definitely what Kirby is. It's bright and beautiful and you can suck people into your body and take their powers and that's it.
I think I did play one of the old, like, I guess it was maybe the first one or the second one.
Yeah. They're all the same.
One of my friends had the SNES Mini.
Yeah.
Brought it over to my house and those were on there. And I think I played one for like 5 minutes, but.
Yep. They're all the same.
Yeah.
This one has a friend component to it where you can throw hearts at other characters that are in the levels and they become your friend. So you can have up to like four people, like three non-player NPCs with you. And it also works. I haven't tried it. I don't think it worked in the demo, but if you wanted to have actual real people playing with you, you could make it like a co-op game.
Cool.
Which seems cool, you know?
Yeah.
And you have to, and there's parts with that you have to like work together to get past certain things. Like you have to all form a bridge and all that kind of stuff. So they're taking it not to really new levels, but they're trying new things, I guess. Mm-hmm. I mean, Kirby's been around for like fucking 30 years, man. Something like that.
Has it been that long?
It's an old game.
Well, when was the first Kirby game? Wasn't this on Super Nintendo?
No, it was on the NES.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is when our friend Google's going to come in helpful here. Can you play me some like music or something while we're doing this? There you go. First thing that came up was like Kirby Ice House. Well, it's not going to give me the same result, but it'd be fun. I'm looking for the Wikipedia. Yeah, here we go. First appearance, Kirby's Dream Land, 1992. I thought it was a lot earlier.
Yeah, than that's about what I thought it was.
So it was Game Boy.
Okay.
Huh, interesting. All right, well, there you go. I remember that there was a Nintendo version of something. I remember.
That was still that era, though, because Super Nintendo was released in the U.S. in 91, I think, something like that. 90, 91. But there was an era there when they were still really pushing the NES, and there were still a lot of new games coming out for the NES for several years. I remember, because I subscribed to Nintendo Power during that time.
Yeah.
And so they were still really pushing NES games for a couple years before it all completely switched over.
Because it was completely, everybody had one. They were saturated.
Absolutely.
So if you think about it, okay, it came out in 92. It is almost 30 years old.
I guess.
It's pretty close.
We'll call it 25 and feel better about ourselves.
Right. I was in high school then. I was I think a junior in 92. So, yeah, let's say 25 years. That'll make me feel better.
Yep. There you go.
All right. So, you've been listening to any music recently? I know we talked about a little bit earlier.
But. Yeah. Not a lot in depth new stuff. I have been staying on top of creating my new release playlists.
Me too.
But I haven't been staying on top of listening to said playlists. But I try to every Friday go and grab all the new stuff and create a playlist out of it. So I can go back and listen to it. And I have listened to a couple things, but I've not listened to any new releases in depth in the last few weeks. Probably the closest I've come is the new Black Moth.
How was that?
I like it. It
what's it comparative to what?
It fits in.
It's on my list. I haven't listened to it yet.
It fits in well with bands like Jex Thoth and Jess and the Ancient Ones and that kind of like retro hard rock metal sound.
New wave of British heavy metal style.
Kind of thing. It fits in well with that. This one's a little bit more hard rock and not as much on the psychedelic stuff, but it still fits in with that crowd, I'd say, and it's pretty good. But I've also been listening to the Halitar album that came out last year. I've been listening to that quite a bit, and the Trees of Eternity album.
They're
that
both phenomenal.
It.
Yeah,
that Trees of Eternity album is haunting.
It is,
man. It's good.
It is so good.
So, but it's not new releases, but that's kind of where I've been.
Speaking of, I found a band. So I weekly will go on to Spotify. Who are still not a sponsor of the show, unfortunately, but they have that release radar. So it starts to learn what your, you know, music patterns are and all that kind of stuff. And I was at the gym a few weeks ago. I talked about this on the newest MSR cast where we played this band. And I was listening to my new release Radar, and this band came on. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? And I stopped. I was actually on the elliptical. I stopped and looked at my phone. It was this band called Ocean of Grief.
Okay.
It's the most phenomenal death doom I've heard since I first discovered Swallow the Sun.
Interesting. Okay.
And it's very comparative to Swallow the Sun, the style. And I've deep dived into their catalog. I've listened to every single one of their albums. So it's really, really good. I think you would really dig it.
I'll have to check that out.
Same with that band In Vain. I've gone back and listened to a lot of their older albums.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like those guys. This new one, there's a couple songs where they sort of, it's a little bit too much. It's just, especially the song with the guy from Trivium, it's a little bit,
okay,
a little bit too much for me. But going back to the old stuff, it's very death doomy, but it's, they're not afraid to try like throwing like flamenco in there and just like weird, like breakdowns of like awkward music. You'd be like, okay, this is actually pretty interesting, but they're really good too. So we also listened to a band called We Sell the Dead,
mm-hmm.
Which is ex guitar player from In Flames and a drummer used to be in him called Gas Lipstick or something like that. Okay. That's his name. I didn't come up with it. And then Apollo, who was the former vocalist of Firewind.
Firehouse.
Not Firehouse.
No. Oh, damn.
What was their popular song? I can't think of it now.
I don't remember.
Something about a girl or something. Firewind with Gus G. Not Firehouse. Let's make sure people know that. But the reason I loved Firewind so much was Apollo's voice, and now he's also in Spiritual Beggars, but he's okay. Also in this band. And this is it's one of these multimedia bands. So there's an online visual component to the album, and we watched one of the videos on YouTube. You can watch it all on YouTube, and it's very different. It's a very striking art style with like a lot of black and red and like, but you made a comment where.
Yeah, I said that I said a couple things. One, I said that I wish that they had kept the stylization and color scheme, but actually shot this thing. Because it would have been really cool that way. The whole thing is done in 3D animation, CGI.
Crude,
but
though.
It's crude. Quite crude. And so what I said was that it looked like digital storyboarding.
Yeah.
It's kind of that level of animation.
Maybe that's where they wanted to go.
It might be.
I don't know.
It might have just been that's what this was the digital storyboard, and they just didn't have the budget to see the vision through.
And we're not talking shit about it.
I'm really not.
No.
I mean, this is my criticism, but, but it's cool though.
Yeah,
I still enjoyed it.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's not going to deter you from enjoying the story,
mm-hmm.
and the music itself. On the YouTube link, I was like, somebody actually made a good comment on YouTube, which is fucking unbelievable.
No.
Somebody on the internet made a nice comment. I cannot believe it. They said it's a cross between Black Sabbath, like Tony Martin era Black Sabbath, and Paradise Lost.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can definitely see that.
Yeah.
Totally see that.
Yeah.
So check out We Sell the Dead. It's look them up on YouTube. You know, if you want to, I think I'm going to go when I have some free time, just actually watch the entire album on YouTube and just,
that's a good idea.
Get a feel for it.
I'm looking at the show notes sitting on the desk over here from MSR Cast. I have listened to that new Visigoth album all the way through Warrior Queen. I think I listened to it through twice while I was setting up my shop. That's good. A fun album. It's
better than the last album. The last album had a couple really cool tracks.
I wasn't really familiar with them prior to this. It showed up on my like new releases, playlist or whatever. And the one song I heard was really cool, so I went and checked out the rest of it. And it's warrior metal stuff, but it's
Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah,
the last album had a song called Dungeon Master.
Have you heard, I found these guys recently, a band called Gygax?
Yes.
That's pretty cool. I like what I've heard from them. They have a new album coming out called Second Edition, which
I have the promo for it. Actually,
the whole thing is all D&D references.
I have the promo for that. Excellent. If you want it. Yeah,
I'd like to hear it.
Speaking of D&D,
because Gygax was a creator. The creator of Dungeons and Dragons.
I'm gonna let you guys know this. This is me telling something that people could think weird about, but I started in my first real Dungeons and Dragons game.
Yeah.
Last Friday.
What did you play?
I played, what did I play? We were a dwarf. Me and my wife were both dwarf fighters.
Okay.
And there's this whole, we got together on Friday night with a bunch of friends, about 8 of us, and we sat outside this bar, we were drinking, and there was a pizza place next door, and smoking cigars and playing D&D, and it's pretty fun.
Which edition of Dungeons & Dragons are you playing?
It was an old edition.
An older one?
Yeah, because the guy that was doing the game master for this whole, it was his whole idea, he went back and bought all the old books and everything off eBay and things like that. So it's all original and it's nothing new. Second edition?
Yeah, because that was kind of the one that like really took off in the 80s and stuff. That was, so were you worrying about things like Thaco to hit armor class 0 and stuff like that? Did you do all that?
We haven't got that far yet.
If you did, you do any combat at all?
No, we haven't done any combat yet.
Okay, so do you have a like on your character sheet a spot that says Thaco on it?
Yes,
second edition, most likely. Then, yeah.
So. You know what my character name is?
What?
Same name I use in every single RPG game that I play. Ass Hattigan.
You're ruining the immersion, Carrie.
No, my name was Ass Hattigan Killmeister. That was my name. It's fun though. I mean, you know, we didn't start till late, so we only played like 2 or 3 hours, but we got sort of far in the story.
What did you think about it as an experience? Having never done it before,
it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You have to really think a lot,
yeah.
And then you and everybody has a role to play, you know. Mm-hmm.
And as playing a fighter is probably a good move if. It's your first time playing.
Yeah.
Because they're fairly straightforward characters.
Okay.
They can get really complex, especially like in third edition and fifth edition that's out now. I'm actually reading through the rules in fifth edition. I haven't played any of it yet, but I'm gearing up for a game. And so being how I am, I read the books cover to cover and make sure I understand all the rules and how all the classes work, even if I'm not playing those classes and all that kind of stuff. Fighters can become really complex characters as far as your build goes and how you play them. But starting out, they're very straightforward and it's probably a good place to start if you've never done it before.
That's good news because that's what we do.
You probably don't want to dive into D&D playing like a wizard or one of the magic classes because they get a lot more complicated.
Yeah, one of the guys that was playing with us, he's really into it, and he was next to me, and he had his whole, you know, sheet of, like, what spells he's learning. And I'm like, okay, that's a little bit too much for me right now.
Yeah,
yeah. I was like, just give me an axe, and I'm good.
Yeah.
I had a giant hammer as my weapon of choice.
Seems appropriate.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. But it's fun. I mean, we're getting together, like, every couple weeks to play the game. The different locations, you know.
Cool.
Yeah. We should start a Metal Geeks version of that.
Okay.
You think George would be down for that?
I don't know.
I don't know if you've ever played.
I think he has. I think
he plays a lot of board games and stuff like that, but
yeah. I think I've heard him talk a little bit about playing. So and I know that Justin's been playing.
Oh, has he?
Yeah. Oh. So he can join our group. I'm inviting him now.
All right.
Right this second.
Let's do it. So we have a topic we want to talk about tonight.
Yeah.
You want to get into that?
Sure.
Should we break or do you just want to get into it? All right. So let's take a quick little break and we'll be back right away. You ready to get immersed?
I'm soaking wet already.
Oh, fuck. should I leave the room?
I'm going to need a moment.
So
we were going to talk about... So before the show, we're like, okay, what are we going to talk about tonight? Because Carrie and I have both been really busy. not consuming media and geek culture recently.
Truth. Hashtag truth.
We've been very busy with things that are geek culture adjacent and geek culture related, but we're not necessarily on the consuming end right now.
We did see Black Panther, though.
Yeah, I have seen Black Panther.
We can talk about that later.
We'll talk about that later, then.
I got immersed in that movie, too.
So what we just, what we're like, okay, well, we're not really hip to what's going on that's real timely right now, just because we're too busy to keep up right now. So what could we talk about that would be fun? What are ideas that things that we've thought about in the past that we've not really discussed? And so what occurred to me, and this, it was related to some recent conversations and thoughts that I've had. But one of the things that occurred to me is a lot of times when we talk about media of various forms on this show, we'll make reference to things being an immersive experience. Mm-hmm. So I thought we'd take some time and talk about what that means and talk about the art form of an immersive experience across different media types and what those things have in common. What does that mean for something to be immersive? Why is that a desirable thing? And how are they executed? You know, it's just an examination of the art form, I think, or the technique. Because I find that a lot of the things that I really enjoy are things that might be described as immersive experiences. So I guess it's an examination of that. I guess I'll start with, we'll do the cheesy thing and be like, the dictionary says,
right.
You know, so, immersion is literally the, like, submerging something in water. So the metaphor there is, it's an experience that you're completely
surrounded by.
Yeah. And so when we get into describing art forms as immersive, it's, I was seeing things like, okay, so it's a art performance or like a drama or something that engages senses beyond just sight and sound or something like that. Mm-hmm. But in a lot of the things we're going to talk about, it's still not that, but it's still engaging, I'd say, some level of your perception or consciousness.
Sure.
That creates an environment that's well beyond just what's right in front of you.
And we're going to be talking about lots of different media styles,
right,
including theme park attractions, heavy metal albums,
right, books,
video games, books, TV. An app on your phone can be immersive if they do it correctly.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of different things that we want to get into and sort of discuss here. So let's do, you want to start with the easy one?
Okay.
Theme park attractions.
Right. So, I mean,
who does it best? Let's say
Disney obviously does it best.
But I will say you have not been. Universal is getting to that same level of immersion that Disney has been doing for many, many years.
So what does it mean in that context when we say that it's immersive? Why are we saying that? Why is that the term? What about it is immersive?
So I'm going to take an example of Disney. At Animal Kingdom, there's a roller coaster. It could be it could have been just a regular normal roller coaster, Expedition Everest. But it's a fully immersive experience. The minute you walk into the area surrounding it, the minute you walk into the line where the storyline sort of unfolds in the queue line,
mm-hmm,
the story takes place on the ride, on the attraction, and you come outside into the gift shop, and the story is still going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, here's a gift shop. No, this is like base camp for the expedition that you were just on. There's so many things that they do correctly that a lot of other, there's better roller coasters in the world. Six Flags has amazing fucking roller coasters, but there's no immersion. They've done a little bit.
An example I was thinking of specifically, I was thinking of a comparison between any given attraction at Disney World that's themed well,
yeah,
and any other given attraction at, say, Six Flags in Arlington, which is the Six Flags park I'm familiar with. And Six Flags will use props,
right,
and go, here are a couple of signs that are supposed to give you a general feel
of what
Batman this is
ride.
About.
Here's a Batman logo.
Right, and how do you know it's a Batman ride? Well, we have a big bat symbol projected on the side of the building. Or like the Mr. Freeze ride, you know, there's some indication of, oh, this is an industrial location
sure.
and all this kind of stuff. But
they're trying.
It's an attempt at theming, and so it's themed, but it's not an immersive theme. So
agreed.
Could we say then that to describe something as immersive is a description of the level of detail? Is it a detail thing?
I think it is an attention to detail because they, Imagineers, they want you to be involved with what you're partaking in. So from, like I said, the minute you walk into the area of any of the parks, so like the Snow White mine train now in the new Fantasyland, mm-hmm. the whole little area around it, it's all, you know, surrounded by the attraction. The Beauty and the Beast restaurant there, Be Our Guest, the area around it, it's all part of like this story. You're actually in the movie. The best example, which I don't think you've been there yet, but it's Cars Land.
Yeah, I haven't been
at
there.
California Adventure at Disneyland Resort. I'm not a fan of that movie really that much at all, but the level of detail in the Cars Land Radiator Springs area of that park, it's fully immersive. It's amazing. There's a couple of like, you know, flat rides and then like the sort of test track style ride they
right.
have there, but
mm-hmm.
All of it involves being in that area. You feel like you're there. You feel like you're in the movie. You've been taken out of your life and it's been plopped down into that movie that you've seen. So you know the area, you know what it looks like, you know what it's supposed to look like. You see it in your mind's eye and you see it in real life and you just get immersed in all the details.
So, and I think that the important thing there, and this goes more into the immersive technique beyond just the theme parks, but this is just in general, I think it's beyond just an attention to detail. I don't think it's simply that. I think it's an attention to detail that implies a richer world than what you actually see.
Mm.
It implies that this story or this event or this attraction or moment or store, what book, whatever, exists inside a convincing greater world. Even if we don't ever see it, we don't ever experience the rest of it, there's details that imply. It's an implication of something bigger than what you're actually seeing.
Okay.
I relate to that immersion metaphor of being dunked in something. You're being dunked in an ocean and your immediate experience is whatever's right around you, but it speaks to this thing is vast and it goes on further than what I actually perceive it to be.
So we hope you're being immersed in this conversation in this episode. Fully immersed. Don't pay attention to the traffic around you. Actually do pay attention to the traffic if you're listening in your car. we've talked about theme parks a little bit and you're not a Universal fan like I am.
I wouldn't say I'm not a fan. It's just I haven't had the exposure. Yeah.
I'm gonna have to say, even though again I'm not a huge fan of the property, but what they've done in both parks in Florida, with the Harry Potter attractions and the themed lands, if you are a Harry Potter fan or nerd for that stuff, It's nirvana for you because you are so immersed in that Harry Potter lore. Everything about it, it's straight out of the book, straight out of the movies. And it's not just, hey, we threw a Harry Potter attraction over here. It's the land. Everything about it just screams, you are part of this world.
So you mentioned, you used a word just a second ago that I think is also integral to this conversation, mm-hmm. which is lore. Things that are lore heavy,
yeah,
we often think of as being immersive as well.
Because there's a lot of details to get through.
And it, again, speaks to what I was mentioning a moment ago. It speaks to a larger world beyond your immediate experience. So, the Elder Scrolls games are one of my favorite series. Been playing Skyrim again recently. That's a I would describe those games as an immersive experience, and a lot of it has to do with the lore that you find books throughout the world that have no bearing on your actual story. They don't have any bearing on quests or things that your character's doing. All they are there to do is enrich the world and make the world seem more real. Those kinds of things. But I think I would contrast that with, and again, your mileage may vary, and this may be just be my experience. I might contrast that with something like World of Warcraft, which I played for a little while. I was never a huge World of Warcraft player, but I did play for a while, had a couple of high-level characters. World of Warcraft is also incredibly lore-heavy.
Oh, yeah.
But I wouldn't describe it as an immersive experience like I would something like Elder Scrolls.
And a lot of the, speaking of games, a lot of the games that people think about right away are going to be fantasy, RPG-driven mm-hmm. yeah. games. But right. I want to bring up one that it's one of the most immersive games that I've ever played, just because of that backstory and the lore, and you think about what happened in this world before I got here. Mm-hmm. It's BioShock.
Yes, I would absolutely agree that BioShock is an immersive experience, and now we're getting beyond just visual details and lore, which BioShock has in droves, but we're also getting into things like sound engineering and music. Because so much of the immersiveness in BioShock comes from the audio.
Yeah.
Whether it be the sound effects or the soundtrack, the music that's used in the game.
Circuits of values.
Circuits of values. I mean, yeah, you can hear that sound clip and you're back in rapture like that.
Exactly right.
So these are different kinds of details. We've kind of been talking about details in terms of visual design and hints at lore and things like that up to this point. But this is another point where the audio is, again, submerging you further into this world. And the BioShock series is phenomenal for that. The Fallout series, one of the things that is interesting about those where they seem more heavy is you'll just stumble across these little vignettes around the world where you'll find a corpse with some odd item next to it. And you're like, something happened here. Has no bearing on the greater story, but it makes the world feel more rich. It makes the world feel alive.
And a lot of games, it's sort of become a trope recently with that. Here is an audio tape that you find in the level as you're playing the game that gives backstory. And it started with BioShock. They had that, of course, mm-hmm. but it's become an overused trope now in gaming design, I think. It's like, oh, how do we explain our backstory? Let's just have them find an audio tape that somebody left behind or mm-hmm. something, or a note or something like that.
Well, and I think the difference, or maybe a difference between the trope version of that and the BioShock version of that is the device that you use to listen to the tapes in BioShock has in-world story. It has its own in-world. The device itself has an in-world story.
Yeah.
Where you get it, how you acquire the device, you see advertisements for the device around the world. So even that is made to seem like, oh yeah, this is just a
something,
thing.
Something here. Somebody in this world would have.
Right. Yeah.
Not just like an old cassette player left around.
Right. And because that could work depending on the context, but sometimes those things break immersion because you go, well, how does that fit in here? You know?
Before we get away from the video game thing, I want to say that there are certain games that might not be immersive AF as we're thinking about,
mm-hmm.
but a well-written single player story driven game immerses me like you cannot believe. So
okay, go ahead.
Like the Uncharted games.
Okay.
I absolutely love those games. Not because the gameplay is great. It's you know, it's typical shoot, jump, climb, that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But including like the new Tomb Raider game that were based on that design
yeah.
are phenomenal. there, I love a good narrative driven game. That's really what draws me in and just, you know, immerses me into that game. I don't want to put it down. That's it. But it's not like, you know, Skyrim where you're walking around and finding lore and stuff like that. It's just a well-written narrative-driven game is okay. my thing.
So that actually brings me to another point that I was thinking about before we were recording. I mentioned World of Warcraft a moment ago and how I don't consider World of Warcraft an immersive experience in the same way that I would consider some of the other games that we're talking about. And as I was thinking about that driving over here, it occurred to me, I don't think multiplayer games can achieve immersion.
It's hard to.
If they can do it, I don't know of one that does, or does it really effectively. I think that maybe then, if that's the case, part of immersion is kind of a meditative personal experience, that it's a thing that you do by yourself. You personally get lost in this world. And I think if you get other real life agents come in on that, it interferes with your immersive experience.
Yeah, agreed.
Because you get the jackass who's like, you know, I'm going to team kill everybody, or I'm going to climb on top of the thing and jump up and down like a jackass or whatever.
The guy jumping up and down like a jackass.
Right. This is not a denigration of multiplayer games at all. It's not my point, but no. It's simply that there's such different things that I'm not sure that you can achieve immersion in a multiplayer.
It breaks it. In a way they're not meaning to, but it's just the nature of the beast. It happens. Mm-hmm. Just because you have so many people involved in the same story,
mm-hmm.
it's not gonna go the way you want it to design. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But those games definitely have a place.
Sure.
Multiplayer games like that.
Yeah.
I don't personally play them a lot, but if you like those, you know, immerse yourself in that. Have fun.
It's just more to say that those don't have the qualities I think that we're talking about. And I think that the designers recognize that. And because I can't think, I mean, like I said, you know, things like MMOs like World of Warcraft or EverQuest or things like that are lore heavy. They're very lore heavy, but I don't think they're immersive.
So there's a lot of first person shooter games that are now, you know, multiplayer online,
mm-hmm.
like Destiny. Let's take Destiny for example. The first one had no real single player aspect to it. There is little, you know, missions here and there, but Destiny 2 did really well for a while. People stopped playing it already because it was a multiplayer, massively multiplayer first person shooter that included that lore in these like levels built into the game that you can do with your friend or people that you don't know. And I think they did it in a right way where you could immerse yourself into their worlds. It's just a whole universe with them. You know what I mean?
So I think of that in contrast to things like Call of Duty multiplayer, where I don't think anyone could say that they haven't always tried to do a very good job of making them graphically compelling.
Right.
They're nice looking games and they're fun. I'm not a big Call of Duty fan, but I do like to play them and I play them online.
Say, bro, you want to play Call of Duty?
they look nice.
Yeah.
There's plenty of details, but these aren't the kind of details that we're talking about. Talking about maybe the kind of details.
Yeah.
And again, this may be why a multiplayer game can't be immersive, is that I think that immersive games almost invite you to slow down,
mm-hmm.
and stop and look at the world around you and just, I mean, I
talk, soak in the bring, details. Yeah.
Soak it in, bring BioShock back into it. The first time I played BioShock, the game was playing and I didn't even realize it at first. That first scene when you're like swimming away from the plane crash.
Right.
It was cutscene, and now it's game time, and I didn't even realize it. And I'm sitting there in the water for like 30 seconds going, okay, what's going to happen? Like, oh, I'm supposed to do something now. And once I started moving in the world, it was so fully compelling, not just visually, not just from the design, but the artwork, the lighting, the design that implies a larger world, implies an adventure to come, was so well done that I crawled through the first couple levels of BioShock because it took me forever to get through because I was stopping and looking at everything.
And it was one of those experiences you did not want to end.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, you felt remorse when you got close to the end of the game. You're like, I don't want it to be over.
Yeah. And I felt like BioShock Infinite captured that very well.
I don't.
You don't think so? I don't think it did it as well as the first one.
No.
But I think it did a really good job of it.
Infinite didn't pull me in like I wanted it to.
Okay.
It was just not my, I don't know, maybe it was the location, the skyhook and seeing that kind of stuff was cool, but I don't know.
So let's see, let's maybe talk about immersion in not video games.
Sure. Can we talk about music?
How do we have immersive music? I think that there is.
Yeah.
And I think that it similarly has to somehow speak to something larger than itself. I think that immersive music almost creates a alternate reality around itself. And I don't just mean we're creating fantasy stories, you know, sword and sorcery kind of things. It doesn't have to be on that level. It doesn't have to be on the level of concept albums even. I think just audibly, through sound quality, you can create a soundscape
so
that is almost an alternate reality.
I'm gonna go back
itself.
Way back in the day. One of the first immersive experiences, this is a very crude, was in 1988. Queensryche, Operation Mindcrime came out. And there's a whole concept album about you're trying to figure out who the killer was.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a deal. I remember this little piece of paper that came with it, like a little ad. You can call a 1-800 number, a 1-888 number, whatever it was. And you could play along with the concept of the album and try to win prizes and stuff like that.
Okay.
If you could guess who the killer was. And that was the first time I've ever experienced anything like that. I mean, mm-hmm. Show No Mercy didn't have that.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
It was like an immersive concept album from a metal band, which was, this is early in that style.
Yeah.
And it was early. We talked about augmented reality.
Yeah. An early attempt at an augmented reality game is what we'd call that now.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what they would have referred to that as at that
point. I don't
think
they had anything for that. It was very, I don't want to say state of the art, but it was ahead of its time, I think.
Yeah. I'm
not going to spoil who the killer really is either.
my experience with something similar was, when
Firehouse?
Yeah, no, when, in the lead up to Nine Inch Nails putting out Year Zero,
What year was that?
That's God.
Don't say years
10,
ago.
10, 11 years ago, something like that. Uh-huh. And some, I can't remember exactly, but that's roughly right. Well, when they did that, I like Nine Inch Nails, but I'm not a massive Nine Inch Nails fan. But I do think that Trent Reznor is a brilliant producer and just a generally incredible creative individual. I don't love all of his music, but I do enjoy a good deal of it. But when they were gearing up to release Year Zero, which is itself a concept album, it was a dystopian kind of a thing. There was a whole augmented reality game that went along with that. And I lost like 2 days to this thing. Once I found it and realized what it was, I got sucked in and I was obsessed with it for a little while. And they really went all in. And that one actually started, in the real world, mm-hmm. which was cool. And that was one of the interesting things about it is that story bled into our own world. So it was things like they intentionally left a thumb drive in like the men's room at a Nine Inch Nails concert. And on it were files for unreleased Nine Inch Nails song, right? So, oh, I found this thing in the bathroom at the show, and it's got new music on it that no one's heard. How cool is that? But then, I don't know how the fuck they expect people to discover this stuff necessarily, but there were things hidden in the sound file that were hints on, here's where you go next. And it leads you to a website, which itself is kind of this arcane, it doesn't explain itself. It's just like some images and a couple little video clips that don't really mean anything on their own. But then you go, and this thing turned into, it was multiple different websites, and they ranged from things like technology companies to government agencies to, you know, somebody's blog website. There were phone numbers that you could call and hear recorded messages. There were, you would get, I had been playing for a while, and then I started getting emails from this government agency letting me know that they were on to me and that they were monitoring me and that I'd better stop the stuff that I was doing, right? This thing went really in depth, and I never got all the way through it. I don't know if anybody ever did.
What happened if you went all the way through it?
I don't know. It may have just been one of those things that you get the satisfaction of having done it.
Now, there was a thing when I was at D23 in 2013, there was a thing going on because this is before the Tomorrowland movie came out. And it was a totally immersive experience like this, like augmented reality where there was an app you can get, and then you had to go into the parks to do certain things. And like if you went into the magic shop and gave them the special word that only the people that were involved with this would know, they would give you something that would give you a hint to go to the next place. And ultimately there was a guy at D23 at a desk in a booth that it was like the history of Tomorrowland. It was all this thing. And ultimately you would win a special prize or like a pin or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was this, I didn't experience myself, but I was watching people experience it. And I heard a podcast back in the day that I listened to experience it all. They played audio clips from it. And I was like, man, that's pretty cool. I wish they would do more things like that, you know?
So we've talked about, so your example of Queensryche and Mine and Nine Inch Nails, both of those were concept albums that they tell a story. They're creating a world in of themselves. And then they created these augmented experiences, and that's the immersive quality. Can we get music that is immersive just in the sound it creates without the need for an extra game, without something that extends further into the real world?
There's okay, so when I think of a fully immersing myself into a band, there's one band that comes to mind, and that's Arion.
Because
everything about every album they've put out, everything to do with the brand of Arion, it's one story branching off. So even like The Human Equation, where it's about a guy in a coma from a car crash, that was, if you listen to the full album at the very end, you can hear them at the very end. You hear a little clip saying that The Human Equation, what is it called? Like something has ended, now back to whatever to the real world. So just that was like an experience inside this universe.
Mm-hmm.
And every album's a concept, and it all together. Like the last album that just came out, The Source, was like the prequel to everything. And if you really dive into it, if you're really into it, you can really immerse yourself into the story and the plot. And, you know, you listen to like each of the singers is a different character. And it's really the most immersive band that I've ever listened to.
So you're still in concept album territory.
Yeah, you are.
I'm talking about, can you think of examples that achieve the same feeling of being immersed in something without that quality?
I don't know.
I'm less sure on this one, but but this is also where I start to point to things like atmospheric black metal and like post metal kind of things that we might normally describe as atmospheric.
If you feel it, you're feeling it.
It creates it audibly creates an environment I think, larger than itself. I think anytime you get music that effectively evokes, I'll put it this way. So a lot of thrash metal is politically themed. It speaks to current real life issues that we deal with in the real world. And we can engage with it emotionally on that level. We can get pissed off about it. We can, fuck it all. And I'm just going to bang my head and enjoy it on that level. But there's something really different about, say, a pagan metal band that really captures a feeling of mythicism, that this thing feels like it belongs in this mythic world. Whether it's historical or historically accurate or not, they at least evoke the feeling of being emotionally or sensually connected with a world in which gods and heroes and, you know, these creatures exist. They kind of are audibly building those worlds. Similarly, your atmospheric black metal bands, your post metal bands are creating these kind of soundscapes where you can kind of fill them in with your own interpretation of, well, what is the soundscape describing? What is the environment that it's created? Does this sound like sounds reverberating in some old decrepit chapel, or does this sound like some cries in the woods in the wild somewhere? Or
so we're talking about augmented reality. Before I forget about this part, I want to talk about, I've never done it before, but I've seen people at Magic Kingdom, the Seekers of the,
yeah, I've never done it either,
the Magic Kingdom.
Yeah.
So you get like a card and then you go around to different locations, and it's an immersive game. It really is. It's going around to locations in the park for real and interacting with it. And that's total, you know, the definition of immersion is interacting with your environment to get something different.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's go old school on this. The most immersive thing you can do in your life is read a book.
I was hoping we were going to talk about books as well.
Because when your mind is your most immersive, you know, instrument you can use.
Mm-hmm.
So your eyes see things and you're it's trained to show you. So it's images put together to show you something.
Mm-hmm.
Books, it's all in your head.
Mm-hmm.
So you're creating something in your mind that the author wants to get across. And even that's why most people say the books are better than the movie. Because
Right. People
that have read the book before and they go see the movie, that's not what I pictured in my head.
That's not their vision.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was actually having a discussion with a guy at Sherwood this last weekend. We were talking about my artwork and some of the influences on it and, things like that. And Lord of the Rings came up, and I mentioned to the guy, I said, you know, as cliche as it may sound, Lord of the Rings really did change my life. And that sounds like a really, you know, cheesy and cliche thing to say, but it really did. Because it not only, because that's an immersive experience. Have you ever read the Lord of the Rings?
I have not.
I've seen
all the movies, but
so it has all of those qualities that we're talking about. There's snippets of poetry that characters will cite.
Right,
there's,
I've seen that.
There's references to history that don't have any further bearing other than, oh, you know, this was this place where this thing happened, but it's almost mentioned in passing. Like it's not really that important. But what all of that builds up to over the course of the story is an incredibly rich world that has influenced people like George R. R. Martin really jumps on that idea.
Yeah.
You know, where you have a world that has a history, it has several different cultures and languages. And that's where Lord of the Rings really had an impact on me as a young person, was it made me, by immersing myself in that world and enjoying the richness of that world, it changed how I saw the real world. And I suddenly developed an interest in things like history and culture and language, things that I'm passionate about today. You know, the progress of civilizations and how does culture manifest itself in the history of religious ideas and philosophy and things like that, these ideas that I'm really passionate about now, I can point back to reading The Lord of the Rings as kind of a jumping off point for a lot of that. And it was because Tolkien had so effectively created an alternate reality that was so rich and so full of detail that I just would get lost in for hours, that it like rewired my brain to look for that kind of thing.
So you read all the books before you saw the movies?
Oh, I read the books ages before the movies came out, yeah.
When you first saw, you know, the Fellowship of the Ring, did you enjoy it, or were you like, that's not
so
what I wanted?
I was at all of the movies at the midnight showings, like I for every one of them. And then I would usually go see it again early the next day as well. Usually my first viewing was my go ahead and get my criticisms out of the way viewing. Find the things that I don't like. Find the things that don't match up. Where have they taken liberties with the story? Where have they taken liberties with characters and moved things around? And so I get that out of the way first and then go back and see it again with that set aside. I've worried about that. I love those movies. And I loved them then. Even when I was being critical of them, I still loved them.
I remember seeing Fellowship of the Ring in the theater with my uncle. And this is a funny story. At the very end of the movie, it says to be continued. There was a guy in front of me who's like, "What? Come on! Where's the rest of the fucking movie?"
I had that.
I was like, "Dude, there's you got plenty more to come."
Yeah, that happened in the theater I was in too.
Did it really?
Yeah, where they're with Frodo and Sam looking off into the distance into Mordor. Yeah, what? I'm like, oh, you were not prepared, sir. No.
So speaking of books, let's look at comic books. Since you're viewing it with your eyes, you're actually seeing what the author wants you to see with the pictures. Is that an immersive experience?
I think it has the capability to, for sure. I think
then you can get involved in it. I mean, it's entertaining, of course, but mm-hmm.
This is kind of funky because I'll defend the art form of comic books any day.
Yeah.
You know, I did a lot of that in college where there was a lot of shit talking about comic art, and I'm like, fuck you guys. and here's why. Like, I have valid reasons for why fuck you guys. But can it be immersive in that same way? I'm not entirely sure. I don't know. I don't see any reason why it couldn't. But I also can't really point to examples.
Right.
So,
I mean, they're entertaining. There can be, you know.
Well, and certainly lore heavy. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Ever tried reading an X-Men comic?
Yeah.
What the fuck? But yeah, I don't know. It's a thing if you are. But then again, this is the same thing as like an attraction. If you're seeing, you're immersed because you're seeing their vision come to life in front of you.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and that's what I'm saying. That's why I don't see why a comic book couldn't achieve that same thing.
So, okay. So speaking of, this is the last topic I want to talk about for like theme parks. So take a 4D attraction.
Mm-hmm. I feel like 4D attractions are like the cheapest version of immersion that there is. I really do. I generally find them not that compelling. But a lot of the same things that they're trying to do in 4D attractions, you can still do and create immersive experience. But the 4D attractions, they try to... it's crass.
It's shoehorned.
It's shoved in there. Seems a little bit crass. Even things like Mickey's PhilharMagic.
Yeah.
It's fun. You know, it's a cute little show. You know, if you got some time to kill, go watch the PhilharMagic. You'll have a good time. It's whatever. Bring the kids. But it's a little...
Or don't bring the kids.
It's a little crass. It's a... I don't mean crass and inappropriate. I just mean it's crass
in its implementation.
Yeah, it's just it's
like Shrek 4D. Have you ever been on that?
No.
So
I bet they use smells in that one because I was going to bring that up.
Yes, I think they do. And so it's more of a like so if you like the seats move. Yeah. Remember, Honey, I Shrunk the Audience.
Mm-hmm.
So like when the rats came out of the screen and then you could feel like the little puffs of air come by your feet,
mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. You know, I mean, it's crude.
Yeah,
but it's a fun experience.
Okay. Yeah. And it can be. Yeah, for sure. But I think so I also think of like, attractions like that are screen based where you're sitting in front of a screen and you have a seat that moves and sprays you with water and, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
Those are the kind of crude things that I'm talking about. And sometimes they'll use smells as well.
Yeah.
And it's generally not really well done, but compare that to things like,
but don't talk about Muppet though. Muppets 4D is awesome.
Muppets 4D is great. But what about, compare that to an experience like the orange scent in Soarin'.
Oh, Horizons.
That's
Horizon. What I remember.
I never got to do Horizons.
Yeah.
But I've read about the orange scent in Horizons. Think about that. Think about some of the other smells that you get in attractions like Pirates of the Caribbean, and I'm not just talking about the water smells bad. I mean, right. Like there's
sulfur
scents,
and
there's
all the smells that you know when you're the Haunted Mansion has
it too. Yeah, yeah, and it's a smell that's intentional. It's an intended part of the experience. And so there are effective ways to use that scent, your sense of smell.
You've been on Etsy and looked that up. There's candle people and there's people making smell like candles from those smells.
Yeah.
And it's just, and I think we never talked about your sense of smell being part of that immersion because it is,
mm-hmm.
because you want to recreate that at home. You want that. The Pirates of the Caribbean water, the water at Disney, has a certain smell to it.
Yeah.
You just don't get it everywhere. It's not overly chlorinated. Something different to it.
Yeah. How they treat it.
There was a YouTube video I watched at one point where they said it wasn't chlorine, but it was something else. Like, I just can't remember what it is.
Okay. But I think I'm kind of going off of the general understanding here. I don't know exactly how true this is, but they say that that memory is more strongly tied to smell than any other of your senses.
Yes.
That you can smell something.
Taste too.
But smell is a part of your
taste.
That
is true.
Is, you know, that they're very closely tied together. So I can definitely see that.
Cause you can remember things the way they look incorrectly.
Mm-hmm.
So you could think it. Oh yeah. I remember it looked like that, but you're completely wrong.
But there are smells that you can smell and immediately you feel the feelings again that you felt in this place.
Yeah.
Which is what these candle folks are trying to capitalize on. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
It's not a stupid idea.
No, it's not a stupid idea at all.
I'd buy a Haunted Mansion or a Dole Whip.
Yeah.
You know, flavored smelling candle. I'd buy it.
Yeah.
I think that's all I have. I mean, I think we've immersed ourselves in this topic a lot.
I think it's interesting. This is a topic that I think about quite a bit, and largely because I am a visual artist and I'm so into music and audio. When I was in college, I actually did whole projects that were nothing but audio, telling some kind of a story with just sound effects.
That's cool.
You know, I did some videos with some sound effects and voiceover, things like that. But yeah, I mean, it's just a thing that I think about quite a bit. What makes these things effective? Why do they appeal to me so much? And I think it's because you can get lost in it. And not that it's escapism, though it can be, but that it creates an alternate reality that's so rich.
Yeah.
That it's a joy to be a part of it.
So if you guys want to keep up this topic and interact with us about it, immerse yourself in the topic with us. There's multiple things you can do. You can go to our Facebook page and you can post on the this thread here for this episode. Mm-hmm. You can go to Twitter, you can go to Instagram, or you can email us at msrcast@gmail.com. When you tweet us, it's at Metal Geeks, and of course you would be
Red Viking Dave.
So yeah, keep the conversation going. It's been a fun topic.
I'd like to know what y'all find to be immersive experiences. What are games? Music? What do you like? Yeah.
Let's take a quick break and we're going to get into our last segment of the evening.
Okay.
Well, my friends, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Metal Geeks podcast. Before we go, we usually have a topic here or a section here of what we're looking forward to. It's something George came up with. Do you have anything you're looking forward to?
Only in like the vaguest sense. I've had my head so far up in my own business that I'm not really sure right now. You have something?
We're going to go see Iced Earth in a couple days with Sanctuary.
That's cool. I would love to go to that show, but I will be back out at the
It's the House of Blues in Houston. We'll talk about this on the next episode, I'm sure. They moved it from the big room to the small room, and then they moved it to a smaller room. It sold out. Yeah.
Okay.
So they released a couple more, tickets today because I got the email or something.
Mm-hmm.
But the House of Blues is a big venue.
Yeah.
They moved it to a small venue in that property.
Okay.
So, I've never been there. Something, the Bronze Peacock Room or something like that.
I have no idea where that is out there.
I don't
either.
I think it's like on the second floor or something like that.
Okay.
So, I'm not too happy about that. That it's going to be in a smaller venue, which probably not as good sound.
Yeah.
So, I know we'll have a review next time, I guess.
I saw Iced Earth at House of Blues.
I did too.
A couple years ago.
With Symphony X, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're on. I was talking to Sean about it earlier, and he said, "If no offense to Sanctuary, which is great, but if it was another co-headlining band, it probably would have done a little bit better."
I don't know. Maybe.
Like a Symphony X or something like that again? Something like that.
Do you think
Nevermore?
Because it's not Worldane, do you think that
I don't think so.
You think, yeah.
Well, maybe for the Sanctuary part, but I mean, Iced Earth, I mean, they'd still take it regardless, you know
what
I mean?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm interested to see how it's going to be Thursday night. I already bought my ticket, so I'm going. I also saw Oceans of Slumber last weekend. With our friends, Blue Funeral.
I really wanted to go to that too. Had to be out at the fairgrounds. So.
It was that place I'd never been to, the White Oak Music Hall.
I haven't been there yet either. Was it nice?
It was upstairs. Apparently, it's in the small room.
Okay.
But it was a nice little. It was very small. I'll tell you, it was a smaller venue. I didn't see downstairs. Blue Funeral put on a good show, and then I didn't see the second band because I was outside talking to some people. And when Oceans of Slumber came on, I mean, there was a lot of people in there. And they put on a great show. I just wish they got to play a little bit longer.
Okay.
So maybe taking off one of the bands and let them play longer. It was their CD release party, yeah, you know?
Right.
So, and the new album is phenomenal.
I have not listened to all of it yet, but I've really liked what I've heard so far.
It's good. It's definitely 90s era, like, peaceful record sounding.
Okay.
Yeah. That's my opinion of it.
Okay.
It's really good, though.
There's a lot of good concerts coming up this year.
Yeah, there is.
So I am looking forward to that. I'm trying to remember which all ones I'm planned for. I'm going to see Styx.
Are you really?
I'm going to see Styx.
I wouldn't mind
when
that.
They come through.
Did you get on the Groupon or something?
I didn't buy them. We're doing kind of a family thing out of it. We're gonna go see Ghost when they come through.
Oh yeah.
We're taking Victoria. We're taking.
Oh wow.
Yeah, we're taking their 6-year-old to go see Ghost because her three favorite songs in the world are their cover of Bible, Ghost's cover of Bible. Yeah. Squarehammer.
I was about to say Squarehammer.
And Let It Go from Frozen. Those are her three favorite songs in the world.
I think her little mind will be blown if Ghost covers Let It Go.
Yeah, probably. So as long as they play either Bible or Square Hammer, we should be okay.
I'm sure they'll play Square Hammer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've heard that they've been playing Bible Live as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right. That'll be fun.
So that'll be cool. Going to, I don't know if I'm supposed to know this yet, but I'm going to see the Slayer farewell
tour. Oh, yeah, are you?
Yeah.
We're going to it.
Yeah, that's a birthday thing for me.
Oh, so. Cool. If it wasn't Slayer's farewell tour, I'd probably skip it, but so many good opening bands, except Lamb of God.
Lamb of God puts on a good show.
They do. I'm just not a huge fan of them. But you have Slayer, Testament, Anthrax, and
Behemoth.
I mean,
I'm there for that alone. So
I think I said it before. No offense to Lamb of God or their fans, because I do. I think they're great for what they are. But if you threw Megadeth on that bill, that Clash of the Titans revisited right here, it would be fucking amazing.
Yeah.
They've also announced a second part of the second leg of the tour, replacing Behemoth as Napalm Death.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Napalm Death can they can really get a lot of songs in in their 20-minute set.
Yeah. Yes.
Behemoth is like 4 or 5 songs and then they're done. Napalm is going to get like 40 songs in.
Also have plans to see, this is much later this year, but Amorphis
and
Dark Tranquility.
I am buying the VIP ticket for that. So it's like $80, but you get, so of course Amorphis, Dark Tranquility, Moonspell,
and Omnium Gathering. I mean, that is a fucking killer
lineup. $80, you get the ticket to the show plus the VIP for all bands, meet and greet. I am definitely,
that sounds worth it.
It doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Cause when I did the VIP for Amorphis last year, and they just didn't like sign. I brought a blank drum head and I got a bunch of other shit signed too. But, Tomi took my drum set or drum head and was like drawing the logo and shit on it. It was super awesome, man.
Excellent.
I'm looking forward to it.
That's going
to
be a good show.
I did, buy a drum head off eBay this week.
From who?
Can you guess? So
is it a monkey's thing?
It is.
Okay.
eBay had like a 20% off coupon.
Okay.
And Mickey Dolenz from the Monkees is selling autographed drum heads. And he'll personalize it to you and stuff like that. So I was like, you know what? I think it'd be worth it for my collection.
That's cool.
And it has their logo and stuff on it. So I was like, yeah, I want that. It's going right next to my Fear Factory and my Devin Townsend.
You're going to have to move a picture.
Picture or two. I'm running out of room.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's the thing I like to collect is drum heads, especially at shows like that. Just, getting the bands to do them like that. Super cool. I'm probably going to do that with Hammerfall too, because I bought VIP for that show too. I'm definitely going to bring him a drum head.
Cool.
Should buy him in bulk now. So let's talk about our sponsor real quick.
Go ahead.
I'm going to let you do it.
I'm unprepared, sir.
So if you're looking for any kind of like cool vinyl toys, Funko Pop, Bandai, Artifex, Band Presto, all those type of things, go to tantrumcollectibles.com. And if you put in the code MetalGeeks, you're going to save 10% off your entire order. And they do have a anniversary sale going on right now on their website as well.
So you should do that. Do that thing.
You can also do pre-orders with them if you're looking for like a Chase Funko Pop and stuff like that. Pre-order through them, you're going to get one. Don't even have to go out to the store to do that. Pretty cool.
Stores will be obsolete before we know it.
Toys R Us is closing down.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is weird, man. I knew a couple of them were closing down, but it's not official yet, but pretty close.
Yeah.
They're not going to be able to pay their debt back, so everything's going.
Yep.
All the Toys R Us are going. The only places left for toys would be Target and Walmart?
I guess, kind of.
Yeah, that's weird.
The decline of capitalism happening before our eyes.
So. We're getting immersed in it right now. All right, well, thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Metal Geeks Podcast. Of course, you can find us on our website at metalgeeks.net. You can find us at esopodcast.com. You can find us on iTunes, subscribe to us there, leave a review, all that good stuff. All the social medias at Twitter, on Facebook, and on Instagram at Metal Geeks. Of course, you can find our sister show on the same feed on iTunes, MSRcast, as well as MSRcast on all the social medias.
You can find me at Red Viking Dave on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and you can see what I'm drawing and sometimes what I'm listening to or what I'm drinking. So, but mostly what I'm drawing. So,
and maybe all three at the same time. Sometimes,
yeah, that definitely is a thing.
All right, well, I have one last thing I need to say,
and
keep it metal,
keep it geeky, my friends.
Yeah, motherfucker.
Spirit of George.
Hey, Geekazoids. Thanks for listening to another fine podcast brought to you by MSR Productions. All rights reserved, blah, 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 blah. For reviews, archives of our podcasts, and all your other metal geekery needs, please visit metalgeeks.net. Keep it geeky. Keep it metal.
For years, Dr. Geek has toiled in obscurity, trying to realize the future through the science of applied geekdom. Pressured to prove his theories or lose funding, Dr. Geek has now opened the doors of his amazing laboratory to public participation and public collaboration. With the help of his partner, Mr. Flask, a test subject known as Mr. Creature, and a computer called the Deus Ex Machine, Dr. Geek conducts an investigation into the world of tomorrow, creating the future by discussing it.
Do you want me to turn down the oxygen in the labyrinth?
Oh boy, the things I get to do for science!
That's not a good sound.
And why is this sticky?
Join the discussion at www.drgeeklab.com.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.